This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Thursday afternoon, April 11th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. It's a big weekend for golf with great weather forecast locally and the Masters Tournament going on in Georgia. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the latest figures indicate there are well over 100 million content producers on YouTube, and that makes breaking through as a star an incredible challenge. Let's check in with someone who's managed to beat the odds. Welcome Mark Wolters, Wolters World Travel and Culture, and he does have a YouTube channel, but he's also an associate professor of business administration at the University of Illinois at the Geese College of Business in Urbana-Champaign. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And obviously, I would imagine before you started the YouTube channel, you like to travel. So at what point in your travels did you decide to become a YouTube content creator?
So it really became when I kept reading all these blogs and all these guidebooks that really felt like they were paid off to make a city sound good. I was like, this isn't right. I have all these friends that are going to waste their vacation times not knowing that these blogs aren't true. And so I started making videos just to help my friends out, thinking, hey, if they're going to get a chance to go to Europe, I don't want them to waste their time. Let's do the good and the bad of travel to kind of give people a better idea. And so that's where it really started.
And then when did you notice that some of these videos were getting traction outside of your friend group?
So I think the first time I realized that I was in Venice, and it was my wife's birthday, and this guy comes up to us, says, hey, could we take a picture? And I thought he wanted me to take a picture of him and his family. He's like, no, I want a picture of you. I'm like, what? Why? And he was just like, no, your videos are so helpful. Got my family ready for this trip. We couldn't have done it without you. I just want to say thank you. And I wanted to get a picture. And that was like 2012. We'd only been doing the videos for a few years, you know, so I didn't really think it was more than just friends. But that was the first time I was like, wow, there's people out there that are really helping.
Now, Mark, I want you to know this. I've been in radio for 25 years. That has never happened to me. So clearly there is a power and there is a human connection to these YouTube videos.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's one thing people don't realize is, if you're there and you're in someone's life, it's like you're helping them. And one thing about social media in general, it's much more personal versus like a movie star kind of thing. It's like, this is someone I bring on my phone. I'm looking together. They're answering my questions. So it's much more of a personal relationship with the fans and the viewers than you have, I think, in like a TV show or a movie.
I think a lot of people, and this takes me back to the days of blogging 20 years ago, or maybe the early days of podcasting, where people can definitely do it themselves and they think, well, I'm going to start a podcast or start a blog or start a YouTube channel or a social media influencer account. And then they realize it's a lot of work. So how much editorial planning goes into your channel? I mean, how much advanced planning and kind of structure do you put into your production?
So I will spend hours. Like, I will go through maybe 100 blogs and probably watch like 30 or 40 videos myself. If you were at my house, our library has an entire wall of just travel books from Lonely Planet to Rick Steves. I will read up as much as I can. I'll spend hours just on the smallest destination so I can get the best background I can. And then when I go travel there, I can see what it works, what doesn't work. But I mean, just the research side is hours and hours. And the editing side, that's one. When my kids were little, we would put them down to bed at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, and then I would work until 2 o'clock in the morning editing videos. So it takes a lot of time, and I think a lot of people don't realize it takes time not just to make the content, but it takes time to actually get an audience on YouTube as well.
Patience, that's the name of the game. Mark Wolters, Wolters World Travel and Culture, watch his YouTube channel because he puts an awful lot of work into it. He's the Associate Professor of Business Administration. The Masters is underway at Augusta National in Georgia. While the weather here means golfers will be out in force this weekend, let's talk about what's expected this season with Amy Coghill, manager of Silver Lake Country Club in Orland Park. Amy, thank you for joining us today. And I got to say, with a last name like Coghill, going into the golf industry for you sounds like it was written in the stars.
I know, yeah. I found myself into the industry, but unfortunately the name doesn't improve my game at all.
Now,
sure does make for a fun industry.
Well, before we talk about the business of golf this weekend, did you ever call upon Coghill to see if they needed the services of Amy Coghill?
Oh my gosh, of course. I worked there during college. I did. Yeah, my great-grandfather's built Coghill and then bought Silver Lake and sold Coghill to the Jemsek family, who we're really good friends with still.
Well, now it all makes perfect sense. So the golf business has been lucrative to you and to your family for a very long time, but we're looking at summer-like conditions for this weekend. That's got to be great if you are in the golf business.
Absolutely, yeah. No, everybody's getting pumped up because of the Masters and the great weather. So I think it's going to be a great weekend, and we've had a great season so far.
Yes.
The course was incredible. We did about 4,800 rounds when normally we do about 300.
Well, I was going to say that the warm winters, when you have warmer than expected Februarys or March or the month of March as you talked about, there's got to be a little bit of a balancing act for any golf course, because once you're open, you're open, and you don't want to open too early just because of one nice weekend, because then you'll just see tumbleweeds for the next four.
Right, exactly. I know it's always a judgment call, but you never know what's going to happen the subsequent week, so you might as well get things up and running and get the employees back and working and, you know, set the tone and make sure the course looks great for everybody for the rest of the season.
How has the business of golf changed? I mean, let's just start since COVID-19, because that was one of the very few activities back in 2020 that people could do because it was outside. Did that bring a lot of people either onto the golf course for the first time or perhaps bring them back?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, COVID brought a lot of new people to the game, you know, that would have never thought about it. And then they realized how much fun it was. You know, it was a very aging industry before. You know, everybody says it was all just seniors. And with the pandemic, we're seeing tons of young people, couples, girls, you know, young kids getting into the game, making it a lot more fun and more relaxed environment.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned that that golfing or golf was starting to age a little bit, because I remember back in the 90s, there was a huge Tiger Woods effect. A lot of people who came in just because Tiger was a superstar. And of course, he's now on the senior circuit and you have new younger stars coming in. Did Tiger Woods really, was he kind of a sea change for the golf business?
Yes, but long-term detrimental, short-term great. You got a lot of people that got into it in a fad type of level of interest. They just got into it. Everybody wanted to play for 1 or 2 years and then they dropped it. Whereas the people that we're seeing now, they're invested. They're working on their game. I, you know, anticipate seeing them for years. I think, with Tiger during those times, the interest in golf at that moment caused an overbuilding of golf courses. So there are way too many golf courses being built during that period so that nobody was making money for the years after that.
And then very quickly, what's kind of the breakdown? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of country clubs that, you know, have $10,000 initiation fees or above. But what's the public course scene, especially in suburban Chicago?
As far as, you know, rates, you know, we're anywhere. A guy could come play for $35 up to $75.
Well, so if you want to go golfing this weekend, there is a place looking for you, basically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's tons of great public courses that make you feel like you're at a private, you know.
Amy Coghill, manager of Silver Lake Country Club in Orland Park, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, exploring the possibilities of an investment.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof?
Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Club Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
One way to add a new wrinkle to managing your money is by forming or becoming part of an investment club. Let's learn more from Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And we've talked about investment clubs before, especially maybe starting a family investment club to get your kids into the habit of investing. But you can get your friends involved. You can have a work group. Anybody can be in an investing club.
Oh, there's no question, and it is actually a very, very popular thing to start. The opportunity to invest, to have people other than just yourself looking at the markets and investment opportunities is always a good thing. I mean, I certainly believe that more heads are better than mine. But there's a fundamental difference between a family investment club and just a general investment club with friends and acquaintances. Well, when mom and dad have the, you know, two minor kids around the table and you're doing it that way, that's fine. But one of the things that we see, one of the failings we see, people put these together, and it's really the social aspect of it that brings people together and they have the idea. Now, I'm not saying that you need to call a lawyer and have them, you know, draw out a whole long drawn agreement, but we really do advocate that you sit down and you put together some general guidelines, maximum single investment, who has the authority to trade and under what circumstances, what are the rules for disengaging, for if somebody says, hey, look, I need cash, I need to be bought out. Well, the buyout of a particular person, depending on the economics at the time, may devastate the club and deprive them of investment dry powder. So putting things like that together are the failing to do that are mistakes that we see made. And that's really the thing that I wanted to talk about today with regard to the investment club as a group of friends, as opposed to the family.
And very quickly, Matt, insisting on this structure, I'm sure you have seen instances in which friend groups or social groups were torn apart over disputes over the investment club because those rules weren't in place.
That's exactly why I was very happy that you wanted to talk about this today, because we have been called in to try to help avoid litigation over these investment clubs. But yes, that's absolutely true that friend groups can fall apart because of this, because you're talking about money. And whenever you're talking about money, you really should treat it like a business, and businesses have guidelines.
Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today to talk about some of the rules to consider if you're starting or joining an investment club. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, have companies pushed too quickly to get out new wearables and other devices?
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Nancy Hardy. Local police district council members ask residents upset over the death of Dexter Reed for restraint during the investigation.
The controversial life of O.J. Simpson is being recalled following his death from cancer. In Technology Thursday, some of the most noted recent releases of wearables have been epic fails. And Chicago-based McDonald's has a new smell-centric advertising approach overseas. WBBM Business, the markets are higher now. The Dow is up 21 points, NASDAQ up 200. 5. S&P 500 up 33. 56 degrees right now under cloudy skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour. Residents of the West Side questioned if the officers who killed Dexter Reed in a shootout last month will be held accountable during a public meeting last night. The details from WBBM's Nancy Hardy.
Activist Miracle Boyd told members of the 11th Police District Council the department should not be allowed to fire 96 shots on any residential block at any civilian under any circumstance. During the council's monthly meeting, another speaker asked how teens are supposed to respect the police if officers are not punished for killing Dexter Reed. The council urged residents to show restraint in the days after the body cam video of the shooting was released, saying, "When emotions are high, we often retreat within our respective communities so we can assign blame safely without challenge." Nancy Hardy, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
O.J. Simpson, legendary football player, actor, and later acquitted of killing his ex-wife and a friend 30 years ago, has died at the age of 76. Gail King, the host of CBS Mornings, has more on his life.
Simpson's life story is extraordinary. He grew up poor in San Francisco, became a sports legend who won the Heisman Trophy while playing for the University of Southern California back in 1968 and set records in the NFL and then moved into acting and TV work. He was one of the most desired commercial endorsers in the 1970s and 80s, but his career fell apart in 1995 when he was accused of stabbing his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and a friend of hers, Ron Goldman, in her home in Los Angeles.
A criminal court jury found Simpson not guilty of murder in October of 1995, but nearly 2 years later, he was found liable for the deaths in a separate civil trial. Simpson's family says he died from prostate cancer. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets have turned positive. We're joined by Gary Kultbaum, President Kultbaum Capital Management in Orlando. Find him online, GaryK.com. Gary, thank you for joining us today. And I guess that last mile, or in the case of inflation, that last percentage point is the hardest one to get.
Yeah, but look, government statistics, I trust them as far as I can throw them. They can come out with their 2.5, 3.5, whatever. Just go to the supermarket. Just go check your insurance bill or your rent. You name it, it's way up there. So I think inflation is here to stay. Whether or not it affects markets is another story. I say instead of the Fed, watch the 10-year yield. It has been ticking up. It's now 4.562. And the higher it goes, the worse fundamentally for consumers. Cost of capital, cost of energy, which also has gone up. So I call it the 1-2 punch, and hopefully they come down again.
Yeah, especially on the bonds rate front, if you have a line of credit or are searching for a mortgage to buy a house, you were getting some relief when the 10-year yield was dancing around the high threes. But yeah, we're back to struggling, and those rates are starting to bite.
Yeah, and just remember, it's not just the consumer. Those rates go from you and I up to the small businesses, the medium-sized businesses, and the big businesses who want to float some bonds, and now they have to float them at higher rates, which affects their profits and potentially their hiring and their producing and all that fun stuff. It goes throughout the whole food chain. And the worry I have is there's a little bit too much talk of everything's just A-OK, because guess what? We got an election year. And let's just hope they are correct. The last thing we need is about like the 70s, where interest rate, I don't even want to say where interest rates were back then, because if that happens, look out below.
Well, at one point, I remember coming across an old news story from the spring of 1980, and it was dancing around 20% for a little while. I mean,
you said it, not me.
Well, hopefully 44 years ago remains 44 years ago in that context. But even with this idea that that inflation is tough to tame, and that 2% target is a little more difficult to attain than we thought just a couple of months ago, there was a sell-off yesterday about the idea that maybe there would be fewer interest rate cuts or maybe no interest rate cuts. But it wasn't that severe. The Dow is still above 38,000. The S&P 500 still above 5,000. So maybe some froth was taken out yesterday on the sell-off, but investors are buying once again today.
Yeah, this isn't even a correction. A correction is 10-15%. This is nothing. And the fact is the NASDAQ 100, the leading indices, are acting just fine. And today, a very good day for some of the big monster tech names. So, yeah, I think we're in pretty decent stead. Next up is big time earnings season, starting with the banks this week, leading to about, 5,000 names over the next few weeks. And we'll find out a lot more. It'll not just be what they report, but what the guidance will be. And hopefully it's good enough to keep the market in what I call rally mode. The last 6 weeks have been nothing more than what I call a rest from a good first couple of months. And there's nothing wrong with the markets resting a little bit before it hopefully makes another move to the upside.
Gary Kaltbaum, President, Kaltbaum Capital Management in the city beautiful Orlando, Florida. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, assessing the hits and many misses in wearable devices. It's Technology Thursday. The desire to produce new products has resulted in some major failures as companies push the envelope with their wearable devices. Let's discuss the dynamics of innovation and quality with Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today and founder and editor-in-chief of techish.com based in Seattle. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. And I feel like if you wanted to go back and do a supercut of Technology Thursday segments, we could talk about some of these products and what their potential was when they were introduced at the time. And I'm guessing today we can talk about how there's a lot of unrealized potential, especially when it comes to wearable AI or virtual reality devices.
Absolutely. So today is a big day in the tech world. It's the launch of Humane's AI Pin. It's the world's first AI-built platform / supercomputer that you attach with a little magnet onto your shirt. The entire device is about the same size as one of the original AirPods cases. It is tiny, and it has a whole bunch of capabilities baked in. But it is very much a beta product. It costs $800. The one that I'm wearing right now costs $800. And it is, I'm not sure if I can say the words I'm thinking of. It is glitchy as all get out.
And then, I mean, not only that, but I think there are some other attempts to provide not just artificial intelligence, but to give you a virtual reality experience or an augmented reality experience. And the graveyard is littered with all sorts of headsets that were introduced with a great deal of fanfare and are probably sitting in a junk drawer somewhere. We're talking about, and the latest and greatest may very well be the Apple Vision Pro, which also gives you a headache at the very least.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I wrote in my column for USA Today, this is the biggest launch since the Apple Vision Pro. That gadget is $3,500. I would be so angry if I bought that and it gave me a headache, if it made my eyeballs hurt. If, you know, all of this promise, the billions of dollars in some cases that are spent on the creation of these, and then they're just really falling flat. But don't forget the smartphone craze arrived alongside the iPhone in 2007. We didn't know quite how to tap and swipe and use all of that. And I don't know if you remember, but I remember there was the whole Steve Jobs, you're holding the iPhone wrong. That came out in about 2009. I had to put duct tape around my iPhone. So do you remember that? So are these the next big thing? You know, when the iPhones launched, it changed our world, right? And we almost immediately started searching for what would ultimately replace it. Brain implants? Nah. Augmented reality glasses? Not quite. Smartwatches? Almost. But a gadget, an AI-first gadget like Humane's AI Pin, we're getting warmer, but we're just not there yet.
We're talking about the Island of Misfit Gadgets with Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder and editor-in-chief of techish.com in Seattle. I was also thinking, too, like there were some technological products that were introduced with a great deal of fanfare. I mean, Zoom, the first time I heard about Zoom was they were doing live reads for a radio station where I worked, and the host was having a lot of fun in the commercial saying Zoom Room, and this was 2007, 2008. Little did we know that a decade or so later that Zoom would literally hold the entire business community together because of COVID-19. That was a black swan event. But the other thing that's a big part of our lives today is QR codes. And 1999, 2000, there was a device called the QCAT, which could read a barcode and then would be connected to your PC, and it would give you the information if you used your QCAT, which was like a scanner that looked like a small cat. And it was eventually scrapped, but 20 years later, QR codes are a part of our lives. Our smartphone is now the QCAT. So there are some instances of applications not working initially, but then society finds a use for them.
Right. Catching on and being like, oh, my gosh, how did I ever live without this? I mean, really going back, I remember saying I will never own a cell phone because I don't want work. I don't want my newsroom to be able to find me 24/7. Can you imagine how many people even know a world without cell phones in them? But we are experiencing really the first huge backlash against the attention drains that our smartphones have become and how much of our lives we're losing stuck behind screens and tapping away on apps. So it will be interesting to see if and when AI rises to the occasion. I think it will, but I still think we're a year or two away.
And it's a way we won't be able to anticipate. Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, thanks for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And
because money matters, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Chicago-headquartered McDonald's is using smell to bring customers into its restaurants in the Netherlands. Let's find out how it works from R.J. Hadevi, head of analytical research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. R.J., thank you for joining us today. And this doesn't involve sophisticated chemicals or high-tech applications or some sort of proprietary process. It sounds like they just put like a box of fries in the billboard and let a fan do the rest.
Yeah, that's pretty much sums it up there, Rob. Exactly that. It's an innovative approach to out-of-home billboard marketing where they just put a box with fries and they just effectively fan the smell around. Importantly, these billboards are placed within 200 yards of a McDonald's location. So I think most consumers can make the link. But it's interesting because there's no images on these billboards, just red or yellow, and really rely on the smell just to drive visitation trends right now. And I think it's part of a broader trend we're seeing. I mean, we're seeing across the board a lot of innovation on billboard. Some of it's due to video screens, but things like this are also starting to become more commonplace, just other ways to create buzz and drive people into restaurant and retail locations.
It also just seems like a response to the fact that because there are so many more ways to get advertising out there and so many more ways to know how much bang for your buck you're getting from a billboard or a commercial or for an advertisement, you really have to find more ways to get to demonstrate that this thing is going to get people in the door and to make them go in the door.
Yeah, exactly that. It's gotten more and more competitive in terms of just the advertising and what we see in the out-of-home space. And it's interesting when we look at more creative ads like this. I mean, typically we do see a positive correlation between, locations that are near those billboards. It tends to drive in foot traffic. And in this day and age, I mean, to be able to measure that, it's really important. So we see a lot of examples, not just McDonald's, which I suspect they may try some tests like this in the United States over time. But we see a lot of other examples. I mean, Disney's done things like this. A couple of the other restaurants have used scented candles and things to entice people. It's an interesting concept, and I expect to see more and more of it, kind of this new future of smell advertising here.
Yeah, I mean, it's smell advertising is one thing you want to call it, but it's more like a two-dimensional billboard. There's a visual component, and then there is some other sensory component to that. And you're correct in pointing out there were a number of ways in which it was tested in the U.S., and I'm guessing one of the big impediments to doing this on a nationwide level in the U.S., whether it's McDonald's or some other business, is that there are probably a lot of local signage ordinances that you have to jump through or amend to make smelling billboards a reality.
Yeah, I think you're correct. It's not going to work in every location. Certainly, there are laws and regulations that could prevent it from being a nationwide phenomenon. But, you know, I suspect that, in certain markets, it may work and other groups may find ways to bring it to the masses here. So, I think the start of what could be an interesting development in the out-of-home advertising space. And like I said, I think it's very interesting that we're evolving past digital billboards. I mean, I think that's been pretty commonplace. And there are some creative things like this, but this really gets people talking. And again, there's a pretty positive linkage between innovative advertising like this and actual visitation trends, and it can really help you put it above your competitors.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at Placer AI in Los Altos, California.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.